V-minus 98. GCC headquarters, Buenos Aires, Argentina. Early in the Argentine evening, a long row of American news crews lined up in front of the huge GCC compound to shoot their live reports for the primetime bulletins. Many of them had stood on this very street multiple times in the past during the building's days as the headquarters of the similarly named Global Space Commission, but little else felt the same. For unlike then, the GSC's successor organization, headed once again by the United Kingdom's William Godfrey, was global in name only. Two particularly high-profile absentees, namely the governments of China and Russia, staunchly opposed the GCC's creation and had vowed upon its announcement that they would not stand idly by while certain Western leaders tried to unjustifiably position themselves as the default representatives of humanity as a whole. The GCC's grand opening was set for the following day, and not by accident. Opening the doors on contact day made more sense than doing so at any other time, Godfrey insisted, and his key supporters agreed. Since that announcement, the Chinese and Russian governments had hastily announced plans of their own for a similar organization, to be known in English as the Earth Liaison Forum. And they dealt a blow to Godfrey's aim of a smooth GSC-GCC transition by formally launching the ELF a week before the GCC's long-announced date. The ELF's opening had been a grand spectacle, with an enormous parade and full red carpet treatment for leaders of participating nations. No majorly surprising defections had occurred so far, but Cuba's presence at the ELF brought the organization's reach far too close to American soil for President Slater's liking, and Godfrey was well aware that some other countries with tumultuous recent relationships with Western powers were also wavering. Beijing's charm offensive included an open-doors policy that welcomed states who were already members of the GCC without insisting that they withdraw. GCC Chairman Godfrey, fully aware that they were trying to bait him into a similar concession, doubled down and insisted that any countries who formally recognized the ELF would be barred from the GCC. He was able to do this without fear, given the unconditional support of the United States, owing to the enormous military and economic benefits its allies were loath to give up for the sake of abstract principles of international inclusion. No one was foolish enough to think that the ELF's leaders were motivated by anything other than geopolitical concerns, in any event, and it did remain true that their nation's absence from the GCC table was through their own choice. Godfrey had repeatedly reaffirmed that no one had been unconditionally excluded from the GCC, and that no one ever would be. The crux of the split had been Godfrey's uncontested election as the new organization's chairman, a decision which most major Western leaders saw as a sensible way to ensure continuity following the disbandment of his Global Space Commission. Chinese and Russian officials, having felt very much like they were equal participants in the GSC's inner circle in name only during the Il Diavolo crisis, refused to participate on such terms. Latent political divisions, never far beneath the surface, were once again on open display as two competing organizations now stood ready to present themselves as the sole legitimate point of diplomatic contact between humanity and all intelligent extraterrestrial races. Ding Xiang's language reached a new level earlier today, a Canadian reporter spoke into his camera, raising his voice to ensure it came across clearly over the hubbub of 100 others doing the same. Particularly alarming was Ding's description of Chairman Godfrey's recommitment to the GCC's exclusion policy and his insistence upon inaugurating the GCC on the anniversary of Contact Day as two deliberate acts of hostile and provocative Western aggression. Tonight, a map of the world colored to represent GCC ELF divisions, like the one our viewers can see on their screens now, bears an all-too-familiar resemblance to the Cold War world my generation grew up in. This isn't what we wanted for our children, and the primary question you have to ask as night falls in Buenos Aires is a simple one. What must the messengers make of all this? The reporter's cameraman outstretched his hand twice to indicate that he still had 10 seconds left. And then, the reporter continued, ready to wrap it up, then comes the question that naturally follows. If the messengers ever make their return, where are they going to land? When the aliens are looking for our leader, where do they turn? Few expected to find an answer to these questions anytime soon, and no one expected that the messengers' next intervention on Earth would come not in Buenos Aires or Beijing, but a small town in northern Italy.